26. Haknam. Chia and Masahiko sat facing one another on the white carpet. The room's only chair was a fragile-looking thing with twisted wire legs and a heart-shaped seat upholstered in pink metal-flake plastic. Neither of them wanted to sit on the bed. Chia had her sandbenders across her knees and was working her fingers into her tipsets. Masahiko's computer was on the carpet in front of him. He'd put its control face back on and peeled a very compact pair of tipsets out of the back of the cube, along with two small black oval cups on fine lengths of optical cable. Another length of the cable ran from his computer to a small open hatch at the back of the sandbenders. Okay, Chia said, settling the last of her tips. Let's go. I've got to get hold of somebody. Yes, he said. He picked up the black cups, one in either hand, and placed them over his eyes. When he let go, they stayed there. It looked uncomfortable. Chia reached up and pulled her own glasses down over her eyes. What do I... Something at the core of things moved simultaneously in mutually impossible directions. It wasn't even like porting. Software conflict? Faint impression of light through a fluttering of rags. And then the thing before her. Building or biomass or cliff face looming there in countless unplanned strata, nothing about it even or regular. Accreted patchwork of shallow random balconies, thousands of small windows throwing back blank silver rectangles of fog, stretching either way to the periphery of vision, and on the high uneven crest of that ragged facade, a black fur of twisted pipe, antennas sagging under vine growth of cable. And past this scribbled border, a sky where colors crawled like gasoline on water. Haknam, he said beside her. What is it? City of darkness, between the walls of the world. She remembered the scarf she'd seen in his room behind the kitchen, its intricate map of something chaotic and compacted, tiny irregular segments of red and black and yellow. And then they were moving forward toward a narrow opening. It's a mud, right? Something like a larger, permanent version of the site the Tokyo chapter had erected for the meeting, or the tropical forest Kelsey and Zona had put up. But people played games in muds. They made up characters for themselves and pretended. Little kids did it, and lonely people. No, he said. Not a game. They were inside now, smoothly accelerating, and the squirming density of the thing was continual visual impact, an optical drumming. Taichung Street. Walls scrawled and crawling with scrolling messages, spectral doorways passing like cards in a shuffled deck. And they were not alone. Others there, ghost figures whipping past, and everywhere the sense of eyes. Fractal filth, bit rot. The corridor of their passage tented with crazy swoops of faintly flickering lines of some kind. Almshouse back street. A sharp turn. Another. Then they were ascending a maze of twisting stairwells, still accelerating, and Chia took a deep breath and closed her eyes. Retinal fireworks bursting there, but the pressure was gone. When she opened her eyes, they were in a much cleaner but no larger version of his room behind the kitchen in the restaurant. No empty ramen bowls, no piles of clothing. He was beside her on the sleeping ledge, staring at the shifting patterns on his computer's control face. Beside it, on the work surface, her sandbenders. The texture mapping was rudimentary, everything a little too smooth and glossy. She looked at him, curious to see how he'd present. A basic scan job. Maybe a year out of date, his hair was shorter. He wore the same black tunic. On the wall behind the computers was an animated version of the printed scarf, its red, black, and yellow bits pulsing slightly. A bright green line traced a route in from the perimeter, where it ended bright green, concentric rings radiated from one particular yellow square. She looked back at him, but he was still staring at the control face. Something chimed. She glanced at the door, which was mapped in a particularly phony-looking wood grain effect, and saw a small white rectangle slide under the door. And keep sliding, straight toward her across the floor to vanish under the sleeping ledge. She looked down in time to see it rise at exactly the same rate up the edge of the striped mattress and over, coming to a halt where it was in optimum position to be read. It was in that same font they'd used at Whiskey Clone, or one just like it. It said, Ku Klux Klan Collectibles, and then some letters and numbers that didn't look like any kind of address she knew. Another chime. She looked at the door in time to see a gray blur scoot from under it, flat, whirling, fast. It was on the white rectangle now, something like the shadow of a crab or spider, two-dimensional and multi-legged. It swallowed it, shot for the door. I have completed responsibility to Walled City, Masahiko said, turning from the control face. What were those things? Chia asked him. What things? Like a business card, crawled under the door, then another thing like a gray cut-out crab that ate it. An advertisement, he decided, and a subprogram that offered criticism. It didn't offer criticism, it ate it. Perhaps the person who wrote the subprogram dislikes advertising. Many do. Or dislikes the advertiser. Political, aesthetic, personal reasons, all are possible. Chia looked around at the reproduction of his tiny room. Why don't you have a bigger site? Instantly worried that it was because he was Japanese, and maybe they were just used to that. But still, it was about the smallest virtual space she could remember having been in. And it wasn't like a bigger one cost more, not unless you were like Zona and wanted yourself a whole country. The Walled City is a concept of scale. Very important. Scale is place, yes? 33,000 people inhabited original, 2.7 hectares, as many as 14 stories. None of which made any sense to Chia. I have to pour it, okay? Of course, he said, and gestured toward her sandbenders. She was braced for that two directions at once thing, but it didn't happen. The bitmapped fish were swimming around in the glass coffee table. She looked out the window at the crayon trees and wondered where the Mumphalumphagus was. She hadn't seen it for a while. It was something her father had made for her when she was a baby, a big pink dinosaur with goofy eyelashes. She checked the table for mail, but there was nothing new. She could phone from here. Call her mother. Sure. Hi, I'm in Tokyo in a love hotel. People are after me because somebody put something in my bag, so what do you think I should do? She tried porting to Kelsey's address instead, but all she got was that annoying marble anteroom and the voice, not Kelsey's, that said that Kelsey Van Troyer wasn't in at the moment. Chia exited without leaving a message. The next address she tried was Zona's, but Zona's provider was down. That happened a lot in Mexico, and particularly in Mexico City, where Zona lived. She decided to try Zona's secret place, because it was on a mainframe in Arizona, and it was never down. She knew Zona didn't like people just showing up there, because Zona didn't want the company that had built the original website and then forgotten about it to discover that Zona had gotten in and set up her own country. She asked the sandbenders where she was porting from now, and it said Helsinki, Finland. So that reporting capability at the hotel was working at least. Just before twilight at Zona's, like always. Chia scanned the floor of a dry swimming pool looking for Zona's lizards, but she didn't see them. Usually they were right there waiting for you, but not this time. Zona. Chia looked up, wondering if she'd see those spooky condor things that Zona kept. The sky was beautiful, but empty. Originally that sky had been the most important part of this place, and no expense had been spared. Serious sky, deep and clean, and a crazy Mexican shade, like pale turquoise. They'd brought people here to sell them airplanes, corporate jets, when the jets were still in the design phase. There had been a white concrete landing strip, but Zona had folded it up into a canyon and mapped over it. All the local color was Zona stuff, the cooking fires and the dead pools and the broken walls. She'd imported landscape files, maybe even real stuff she knew from somewhere in Mexico. Zona. Something rattled up the nearest ridge, like pebbles on a sheet of metal. It's okay. One of the lizards. She's just not here now. A twig snapped. Closer. Don't fuck around, Zona. But she exited. The bitmapped fish swam back and forth. That had been very creepy. She wasn't sure why exactly, but it had been. Still was, kind of. She looked at the door to her bedroom and found herself wondering what she'd find there if she gestured for it. The bed, her low-res skyline poster, the agent of Lowe greeting her in his mindless, friendly way. But what if she found something else? Something waiting, like she could still hear that rattle up the slope. Or what if she went to the wire-framed door where her mother's room would have been? What if she opened it and her mother's room was there after all, and not her mother waiting, but something else? She was creeping herself out, that was all. She looked at her stack of low-res albums beside the lithographed lunchbox, her virtual Venice beside that. Even her music master would seem like company now. She opened it, watching the piazza decompress like some incredibly intricate paper pop-up book on fast-forward, facades and colonnades springing up around her, with the hour before a winter's dawn for backlight. Turning from the water, where the prows of black gondolas bobbed like marks in some lost system of musical notation, she lifted her finger and shot forward into the maze, thinking as she did that this place had been as strange in its way as Masahiko's walled city. And what was that all supposed to be about anyway? And it was only as she crossed her third bridge that she noticed that he wasn't there. Hey! She stopped. A shop window displayed the masks of carnival, the really ancient ones, black penis-nosed leather, empty eye holes, a mirror draped with yellowed crepe. Checking the sandbenders to make sure she hadn't turned him off, she hadn't. Chia closed her eyes and counted to three. Made herself feel the carpeted floor she sat on in the hotel die. She opened her eyes. At the end of the narrow Venetian street, down the tilted, stepped cobbles where it opened out into a small square or plaza, an unfamiliar figure stood beside the central fountain. She pulled the goggles off without bothering to close Venice. Masahiko sat opposite her, his legs crossed, the black cups sucked up against his eyes. His lips were moving silently, and his hands on his knees in their black tipsets traced tiny finger patterns in the air. Mary Alice was sitting on the furry pink bed with an unlit cigarette in her mouth. She had a little square gray gun in her hand, and Chia saw how the freshly glossed red of her nails contrasted with the pearly plastic of the handle. "Start it again," Mary Alice said around the cigarette. She pulled the trigger, causing a small golden flame to spring up from the muzzle, and used it to light her cigarette. "Tokyo, I'll tell you, does it every time."